It's time to Fade the Chalk.
Fade the Chalk.
Presented by the FTN Network, helping you win your fantasy leagues and dominate in DFS. And now, here are your hosts, Derek Brown and Adam Pfeiffer.
It is time. Welcome back, everybody, to another edition of the Fade the Chalk podcast, presented, of course, by the FTN Network. My name is Adam Pfeiffer. It is week two, the DFS game-by-game episode, my favorite episode each week to record and to break down all 13 games on Sunday's main slate. I have a fantastic guest. It's John Daigle from NBC Sports Edge, co-host of A Good Football Show, doing a ton of great stuff over at NBC. Daigle, what's up, man? Appreciate you coming on again. How was your week one, and how's the grind so far? It's only been a week, but it feels like probably like five.
Yeah, we say week one. It's actually week two, but week one for us in the industry because it's the first week we have legitimate, authenticated data. And so that means we also have to sort through everything. Like, people can go on TV or whatever radio shows and say, wow, week one is so wacky and wild, whereas it's our job to explain why it was wacky and wild and if that wildness continues on, which makes it even tougher in week one because, as we know, there are only so many things you need to adjust. If anything, you need to adjust. You have to figure that out. So it has admittedly been a long week that walloped me over the head. I am still getting into my regular season routine, but nonetheless, very happy, very grateful. And I think I have this slate sorted out to where I'm comfortable with it. That doesn't mean I'm going to win, but I'm pretty comfortable.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah, of course. Like, I mean, we all thought we were going to win with the Tennessee stacks last week, and their offense just completely fell apart. So hopefully.
I had some of that. I mean, even I had a lot more Buffalo Steelers, and like none of them mm-hmm. got there. You know, on the DFS building block show every Friday, 6 p.m. Eastern, by the way, I will be out this week, but we'll be back again for the rest of the season. So you can watch it with Kyle Dvorak and Jenny Carter this week. We even put people on the Seahawks offense. So that worked out well. But then when you had the pivots later in the afternoon, for instance, before kickoff, before even the noon slate started, I had Donovan Peoples-Jones in my flex with the Beckham news. And I thought I played it to a T whenever right. Beckham officially got rolled out. But it turns out that DPJ routes just don't matter. And apparently Shorts is going to get all the air yards and deep targets. So again, like, you could have the process right, but it really doesn't matter in the end. We still need the results.
Yeah. And obviously, like, the pricing was super soft last week because the slate came out, you know, months ago. And, you know, week two, the pricing is still kind of soft. So we'll talk about it. There's a lot of interesting price tags on players. And we got 13 games. So let's get right into it. Starting with Buffalo and Miami, the Bills offense obviously took a step back in week one. Tough matchup, though. The pressure rate was insane for the Steelers. Not that that's shocking given the makeup of their defense, but like, Josh Allen was under pressure on like 40% of his dropbacks. I would expect things to be better here in Miami. What are your thoughts on this game, injury news wise? Other than Will Fuller will be back from suspension, though he didn't practice, I believe, today. So we'll have to keep an eye on that. And then Gabriel Davis, when the ankle, didn't practice, I believe, on Wednesday. Haven't seen Thursday yet. And then other than that, we'll see if Zach Moss is also a healthy scratch or not. That was rather surprising. Let's start with the Bills, though. Like, are you worried about their offense? Was it a 1 week thing? And could we go back to them in a potential, you know, overlooked GPP stack of Josh Allen and Stephon Diggs?
I didn't adjust a single thing. Last year, even in their matchup with the Steelers stifled them in the first half they played. Finger. And then the Bills ran a lot more no huddle in the second half. But either way, the Steelers just know how to match up with Josh Allen. After finishing third overall in blitz rate last year, the Steelers actually just blitzed Allen 1% of the time in week one, literally a league low rate. Whereas Miami in week one blitzed at the league's second highest rate, perhaps because they played a rookie quarterback in Mac Jones and thought that was the best approach. But overall, we've also seen last year, Allen averaged 10.6 yards per attempt against the Dolphins, including the last time we saw him in that final game where he played three quarters and got pulled. So the Bills offense, I believe they are going to exceed their team total, and no doubt one of my favorite double stacks of the week. You mentioned also on the Dolphins side of the ball, I hope Fuller's healthy, and I hope it then renders Jalen Waddle's roster percentage way down, because that's the player I want to have in my run back. Just having ran 75% of his routes from the slot, and more importantly, had concerted usage. They actually schemed up plays for him and ran the offense through him. And if we get Fuller back as a presence that the Bills need to be aware of on the boundary, I feel like that's even better for Jalen Waddle getting open in the middle of the field. So I am definitely looking at Allen double stacks with the Waddle run back.
Yeah, and it's interesting, not that it's too shocking, but if you watched the Bills, especially last week, they just targeted Levi Wallace, who I think is a fine corner, but obviously you're not throwing to Trey White a ton. And Levi Wallace is like a solid corner in terms of, like, he's rarely out of position and he makes good tackles, but his ball skills are not great. He had a couple of defensive pass interferences in this game. So, like, we're going to probably continue to see teams go at Levi Wallace. And if that's the case, I don't think Trey White doesn't really shadow. So he's not going to shadow Parker, Fuller. He's going to be kind of all over. So, like, there's going to be situations for Jalen Waddle definitely to have, you know, an opportunity against Levi Wallace. And I agree. Like, I love Josh Allen and Diggs. People are going to be off them. But if you look at the advanced, like, passing numbers for Josh Allen, this offense from week one against Pittsburgh and then last year against Pittsburgh, they're nearly identical. The difference is, like you said, they were getting defenders in Josh Allen's face on four-man and three-man rushes. Like, any quarterback is going to struggle in that. When you have more defenders dropping back in coverage, it's still getting pressure. So I love Josh Allen in tournaments. I mean, Emmanuel Sanders had a ton of air yards in week one. Probably should have had a touchdown. Josh Allen just missed him. He's 4K, still operated as the clear wide receiver three. This team ran four wide like 40-plus percent of the time in week one, easily the highest rate in the NFL. But if Gabriel Davis is out, I mean, it's going to be just mainly three wide. And, you know, Davis is a really reliable end zone target for Josh Allen. So if he were out, like, Sanders would get a bump at 4K, I think would be viable. And then the backfield, like, do we think Zach Moss is a healthy scratch again? I think Sean McDermott after the game said it was kind of like a numbers thing. You know, Singletary didn't have, you know, terrific numbers, but the opportunities were there, right? Played 64 of 85 snaps, had 14 touches, ran a ton of passing routes. Against a Miami run defense, that's not great. I mean, they gave up over 100 yards to Damien Harris. Last year, they were among the league leaders in like 10 and 20-yard runs allowed, and they gave up, I think, four 10-plus-yard runs to the Patriots. Would you have any interest in Singletary?
No, I just don't play Bills running backs. I don't draft Bills running backs. I don't play them. Again, like, everyone thinks, oh, I'm getting a back in a great backfield, but the issue is the Bills offense is great because of what they do. Just in passing at the league's second highest rate and neutral game script last year, Allen, even in the final preseason game, 26 pass attempts on his 33 snaps in the first half. It's just, if the Bills running backs touch the ball, that means they are not that good of an offense that you think you're getting. So the offense gets worse. It's still above average because they have talented players, but it gets worse when Singletary or Zach Moss get the ball. So not the kind of guys I really play. I would be interested to see what percentages Cole Beasley and Sanders come in, because to your point, Sanders ran just three routes fewer than Cole Beasley, but he still got five fewer targets and finished with just one fewer air yard than Stephon Diggs. And so with that 18.5 ADOT as the team's deep threat, that's something I'm very interested in, because there are a lot of air yards, as you'll, you know, find out throughout the weeks coming up, that get miscited. They're called air yards, but, like, even someone like Anthony Schwartz, I kind of consider it just prayer yards, which are just like the off inefficient air yards that don't matter. Like DJ Shark, Jerry Jeudy last year, it didn't matter if they had 300 air yards per week because they were getting them from Drew Locke, right? Or they were getting them from Mike Glennon. And so, like, Emmanuel Sanders' air yards are different because they're Josh Allen. We trust those. And so if he's going to come in significantly less rostered than Cole Beasley, of course I'm double stacking Sanders instead of Beasley with Diggs.
Yeah, I like the call a lot. And even if Gabriel Davis is active, it doesn't really matter. Like, you can still easily play Emmanuel Sanders, who was clearly running as the third option. And I think the Bills passing offense, they get back on track here. I agree. I like them over their total. For Miami, you mentioned Waddle. Like, I'm not really on this team. I'm not on the running backs. Like, Gaskin was the lead back, but he, like, Malcolm Brown and Savon Ahmed still played a decent amount of snaps. Mike Gesicki's snaps were way down. He played behind Durham Smythe, and his routes weren't even that great. And now you potentially bring Will Fuller into the offense. Anybody on Miami interest you other than when you mentioned Jalen Waddle?
If someone wants to play Will Fuller, I obviously don't have an issue with that because he's Will Fuller. We don't know how he's going to be in a new scheme. Like if he qualifies as the level of receiver like Stephon Diggs and Hopkins last year that can change teams and it just doesn't matter because they're that good. We generally don't know if Will Fuller is that player. I have faith he is because he was even a great college prospect out of Notre Dame, but we don't know just yet. So if someone threw him in, that's fine. But other than that, not really anyone else. And for redraft leagues, in my waiver wire column, NBCSportsEdge.com, every Tuesday. Also, I update it overnight on Tuesday, and then for Wednesday for deeper leagues, since FFPC, NFFC, they all run in high-stakes league waivers on Wednesday night. I have Gesicki on the drop list. That was the worst-case scenario for Gesicki because that came without Will Fuller. Just for his target share and route run percentage to dip without Fuller is insane, and it was always a concern since he's been top two at his position and slot rate the past couple of years. But now they have Waddle, who they invested much more draft capital into to play that position. And so, like, Gesicki's really someone I'm just going to avoid all year long, most likely, unless something drastic happens along the way with his usage.
Yeah, I had zero, like, I didn't understand the hype around him in redraft season. So, like, yeah, I'm and seeing that in week one just kind of solidifies that. But we're going to talk about another tight end that that I appear to be wrong about. So we'll talk about that. That's a little teaser for the 4 o'clock game. I think it's actually 1 o'clock game. So we'll get to that game, but let's go to Houston and Cleveland. 48 point total implied right now. The Browns massive favorites here, around 12 points. The last time I checked, Odell Beckham already been ruled out for this game. So, you know, Jarvis Landry will remain the top option in this passing game, depending on how much they need him. We will see. I mean, yes, Houston just put up 37 against Jacksonville, but this is still a team we project to be pretty bad. I mean, how safe and how strong of options are Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt? You know, Chubb got the 15 carries, 83 yards and 2 touchdowns, but, you know, Hunt obviously still played his role. There could be just enough rushing volume for both these guys to get theirs in this game.
Yeah, Hunt had 2 carries inside the 10. Chubb had 4. And then Chubb out-carried Hunt inside the 5, 2-1. But still very clearly Hunt's involved because Hunt's a very good player. Having said that, since he returned from injury last year, Chubb has averaged 18 fantasy points per game. And this is pretty much the nut game script for him since we're obviously not buying anything the Texans did. Even though I will say Tyrod Taylor surprisingly looked very good. But yeah, that's against a Jags defense. This is a Cleveland defense that just hung with the Chiefs until the last drive, had a 22-10 lead over the Chiefs over the first half. So the Browns are just a playoff team that we expect to compete deep into the postseason. The Texans are nothing. The Texans played a home divisional game season opener, and they trounced an Urban Meyer offense. No big deal. We're just throwing that behind us. I think the Browns and Nick Chubb roll here.
Yeah, and like, in case we needed more evidence of how good this Cleveland offensive line is, I mean, just go watch that game in week one. I mean, Wyatt Teller and these guys, like Nick Chubb, I think was like 5.5 yards before contact per carry. Like, it was ridiculous. And this is just a mismatch, right, between Houston's D-line and Cleveland's offensive line. Last year, the Texans allowed 17 runs of 20 yards or more, the fourth most in the NFL. And Nick Chubb last year, second in breakaway runs, despite missing 4 games. He was first in 2019. Like, he is the king along with Derrick Henry in breakaway runs. This is the exact ideal game script, although they did give him a couple targets early in that last game, which was kind of nice. Obviously, he doesn't have a ceiling of like 6-7 targets, but, you know, as 12-point home favorites, this is the ideal spot for Kareem Hunt, or for Nick Chubb, and you can still play Kareem Hunt, I think, as well. The pass catchers, I mean, how much are the Browns going to have to throw in this game? Baker Mayfield looked pretty good for until like the end of that game, but just didn't have any touchdown passes because Chubb broke one from, I think, like 20 yards out. You know, Landry had the rushing touchdown. Like, I don't think Baker is a bad play. I just don't know if he has a massive ceiling in tournaments. And then obviously Landry should be the number one option. You mentioned Anthony Schwartz earlier, who, you know, played a pretty huge role in that first game. Donovan Peoples-Jones still ran the routes. And then the tight ends, like, Hooper didn't run as many routes as we thought, even though they said they would have a larger role for him entering the season. It was a lot more David Njoku. Do any of these pass catchers outside of maybe Jarvis Landry interest you?
Not personally. As you said, Landry's by far the safest. Has averaged 7.5 targets now going back to last year without Odell Beckham. Also looked healthy, getting a rushing touchdown in that game. But We also know that Rashad Higgins only ran four routes, played four snaps, I believe, actually, and was brought along slowly, is supposed to slowly integrate back into the offense this week. So what happens with Donovan Peoples-Jones, who ran nine more routes than Anthony Schwartz, but only got one target? And Schwartz, of course, their third-round rookie, who ran a 4.240 at his pro day, and that's why he was used intentionally downfield, like straight nine routes and just toss it deep to him. And he tied for the team high and with five targets with Landry and David Njoku. Njoku, of course, was also played more snaps than both Austin Hooper and Harrison Bryant, but all were still used throughout the game. So I genuinely have no idea, since we now know Odell Beckham is also out, outside of Landry and Chubb and Hunt, if you want to get crazy. That's really it for me in this among the Browns offense.
Like you said, Tyrod Taylor did look good in that last game. I think the most surprising stat of the week was Mark Ingram getting 26 carries. I can safely say that will not happen again this year, especially here as 12-point dogs. David Johnson has shown that he's going to be the pass catching back in this offense. But do we care? Like, Brandon Cooks look good. Do we want anybody on Houston?
If you're playing a Browns deck, you probably, unless it's just Chubb or Hunt with the Browns defense, you probably need a run back in tournaments. And for me, that would only be Brandon Cooks, unless Pharaoh Brown is ruled out, because Brown actually blocked. I believe he had 14 more run blocking snaps than Jordan Akins, but Akins ran three more routes. He just wasn't he didn't produce as much in the box scores Brown, but Brown did not practice on Wednesday. So if he's banged up and it's just Akins, that becomes really sneaky. The only issue is, if you're looking like at the overarching view of the slate, Darren Waller's here without Travis Kelce. So Darren Waller, clearly the primary option after 19 targets Monday night. So any tight end you roster, and there are a few that got amazing usage that are available here, but you have to convince yourself that they are going to outproduce Darren Waller, or at least come close to his salary. And so that's really the issue, and paying down this week at that spot.
All right, cool. Let's move on to Cincinnati and Chicago. This game's kind of interesting to me. Like, entering week one, the Bengals were like super affordable, right? Everybody across the board was cheap, and they're still pretty cheap, right? Joe Burrow on DraftKings is 5,800. He's relatively cheap on FanDuel as well. Mixon, 33 touches, dominated the snaps. He's 7K. And then, you know, T. Higgins got priced up a bit. Jamar Chase has barely been priced up. The Chicago secondary is very, very exploitable, right? They allowed, and again, it's not the same offense as the Rams, but they allowed a league high 12 yards per attempt in week one against the Rams. Their corners are not exactly the strongest point of their team. And we did see the Bengals go surprisingly run heavy in the first game, but they did have a lead for a lot of that game. And maybe you can say they were kind of, you know, monitoring Joe Burrow, whose first game back off the ACL. And then he actually was a little bit banged up, I think, with like a shoulder or something in that game. So I wonder if they go back to not being, you know, with when Mixon's healthy and playing like he did, like, they're not going to be 50 pass attempts. But like, if the Bears can slow down the run here, I really think this Bengal stack is intriguing here. And for me, it kind of starts with Tyler Boyd, the one player who didn't do anything from this team last game. He still ran a ton of routes, still played a bunch of snaps, was in the slot around 82% of the time. And you look at what the Rams just did in the slot to this Bears team on Sunday night. I mean, their slot corner Marquis Christian got absolutely destroyed. He up two touchdowns in coverage, five receptions on six targets. He's going to primarily see Tyler Boyd in this game, who's only 4,700 on DraftKings. I wrote about it on FTN Fantasy. Tyler Boyd is like my favorite value receiver on the slate, at least one of them. So I like him. Apparently, Jamar Chase actually can play football, so that's cool. He's still only 5K. Like, I think the Bengals' passing stack is very intriguing here, especially given their prices.
They just have to pass more. Even in having the league's eighth highest run play rate and neutral gain script in week one, Burrow was at least efficient with 9.6 yards per attempt and a 74% completion rate. Having said that, even in running the ball that high of a rate, he was getting smashed behind that offensive line. They were trying to protect him, and it basically wasn't working. But still uber efficient, so that's okay. And as we know, the Bears allowed a week one high 12 yards per attempt through the air, to your point, because their cornerbacks are inexperienced and seem pretty awful, honestly, even though they were chasing Sean McVay's scheme, which with an above average quarterback is a scary proposition for the entire year. And so that's why I think the Bengals are okay. But for Boyd, for me, they just have to pass more because, in my opinion, he is the inferior talent to T. T. Higgins, who continues to transcend. And remember, Chase led in every stat, maybe would have done so anyways, but did so because Higgins was carted off for an IV for a few possessions at one point. So right. Like even those target and snap numbers are a little misconstrued. Just another instance of everything being a little confusing in week one that we're trying to sort through and figure out right now. So I'm okay with all of them, but I also think the Bears are kind of interesting as well, just given, and you know, it was Dalvin Cook, so he was going to have a good game as well. But just the fact that David Montgomery, how he was used and how explosive he looked, the only issue with David Montgomery is that you have to get a ceiling if you play him. And although he was great, he did not have the pass catching role that he had last year that helped him elevate to become an RB1. In the first month of the season, he averaged 20 routes per game with and behind Tariq Cohen. And that's exactly what happened in this one. 20 routes to Damian Williams, 20 routes. Williams, who actually saw five of the team's six backfield targets. And so to me, Montgomery needs that pass catching ceiling to truly be like thrown into tournaments as an RB1. So you can play this one out in your head how you think the game script goes. I think it could go either way, even though I believe Cincinnati is the better pick here and think they're live road dogs. So, yeah, it really just comes down to that for me. I don't know how much boiled or this game how I'll have, honestly. But, you know, you can have faith in Mixon, too, if you want to go that route.
Yeah, it's like until we see something from – you know, the Bears to where they go to Justin Fields, like it's tough to feel great about the pass catchers. Like Robinson's going to get the volume. He's fairly priced. We actually saw Chidobe Awuzie shadow Justin Jefferson on just over 71% of his routes. So like that's kind of interesting to see if he shadows Robinson. Not that he's a cornerback we worry about. It's just that's the way that the Bengals kind of deployed him. Again, they were without Trey Waynes in that game, too. I mean, he's fine. It's just where he's priced. There's a lot of really good receivers that are either in that price range or a little bit less or a little bit more. Like he's kind of around the Dallas receivers who we'll talk about. So it's tough. Like if I'm going down that low at tight end, at least I don't hate Cole Kmet. I was happy to see his usage of at what it was. And if Andy Dalton's going to continue to not throw the ball downfield, that could benefit Cole Kmet. And he still played a lot more than Jimmy Graham, which was the trend down the stretch of last season. And it's just chasing routes and chasing snaps, which I believe are still in Cole Kmet's favor. So other than that, though, like I think a sneaky Bengal stack, especially because a lot of people are talking to your point about how they went really run heavy. I mean, we know this team at any moment can just go flip the script and go back to throwing the ball 40 plus times. And if that's the case, and I think it's going to help Tyler Boyd a lot, like you said, because Jamar Chase and T. Higgins are better talents than him. So I think this game is kind of interesting in that regard. Montgomery, like you said, I think he's fine, but I do agree. Like that was a concern I had. It wasn't the fact that, you know, Tariq Cohen wasn't there. It's just the fact that they didn't have any other running backs behind him in general. So why not just let him play all the snaps and run all the routes? Now they have Damian Williams, who played a decent amount in week one. So again, he's fine, but not like a building block for me. Anything else in this game?
It's just that if you're playing Allen Robinson, Darnell Mooney, Cole Kmet, yes, like all their usage is great. Kmet out snapping Jimmy Graham 51-14. Darnell Mooney playing literally every snap and running a route on every one of Dalton's dropbacks. Allen Robinson leading the team with a double digit targets, 11 of them. But they're prayer yards. They're Andy Dalton stats. So, like, they don't matter is the issue here. Despite the talent, as we saw with CeeDee Lamb and Amari Cooper last year, talent cannot overcome the lack of talent Andy Dalton has. And so, like, that's my issue. It is definitely just, like, Hail Marrying these guys if you're playing them in game stacks here. And by the way, there's nothing wrong with Hail Marrying. But just know what you're up against. Know the hill you're climbing.
And I was going to say, like, I love prayer yards. I love that term. That's brilliant.
That's something I got very angry about when everyone kept telling me about Jerry Jeudy, DJ Shark. The list goes on and on, just the guys getting just bad.
I mean,
bad,
Jeudy had to have been the king of that last year.
Yeah, Jeudy was the king. Jeudy and Shark were the king. Because remember when they threw Glidden in, he even had the press conference and said he realized he's playing for his NFL career, and so he's just going to take shots. And to his credit, he did take shots. I believe his deep ball rate was over 30%. The issue is, what do you think happens when Glennon throws it deep? It doesn't go anywhere. So,
like, that was, dude, that's I watch, because I had a lot of DJ Chark last year, right? And yeah. I'm watching the Jacksonville games, and he's getting separation down the field. The ball sails 7 yards out of bounds. I'm like, all right, this is cool.
It was also Jalen Reagor as well, because Carson Wentz. Like, and yeah, Chark,
I believe Chark's off to a similar start this year. He had 3 catches on 12 targets and a ton of air yards in week one, including the 41-yard touchdown. So,
but we have faith so right. far in Trevor Lawrence, even though the offense did some wacky things, which we'll get to that point later.
Let's go to potentially the least appealing game of the slate, the Jets at home against the Patriots, 43-point total. The Patriots are 6-point favorites on the road. Looks like Jameson Crowder is going to be back for the Jets. Elijah Moore was a popular value play, didn't get it done. Corey Davis just continues to be the clear number one option on this team. But we know that the Patriots are going to run a ton of man. J.C. Jackson also shadowed Devontae Parker in week one, so I would imagine he shadows Corey Davis here. Davis has been pretty good against man coverage throughout his career, so it's kind of interesting. And Zach Wilson, the first half of that Jets game, looked awful. Second half, he looked pretty good. So let's start with the Jets. I'm assuming the backfield is off limits. So is it just like Corey Davis for you?
That's pretty much about it. And I don't even know if I'd go that far after Wilson was pressured at the league's third highest rates. And this matchup is significantly
tougher.
And now
Becton's out.
Right, and significantly tougher than the matchup they had against the Panthers. So I don't know if I go anywhere. And by the way, that's kind of a lesson week one is for those cheap receivers. And honestly, if you pay up as well, it's not really like you're not trying to chase the chalk. Like you weren't in tournaments. You weren't going to Elijah Moore, Rondell Moore if you wanted to run the double stack Titans out.
Yeah, I had a lot of Rondell.
Yeah, but I mean, you weren't playing like Terrace Marshall, Elijah Moore, just because once you saw everyone played those guys, then you start asking yourself which receivers are maybe not as good of plays, but what are the range of outcomes for the 31 to 3400 guys that everyone's overlooking because they're going to this other group?
Well, what I did was I completely 100% faded Callaway and just said, I'm just going to take, $200 more and play Marv. So that worked out. But I also had a lot of Najee Harris, who we'll talk about. So that didn't help. But I'm with you. Like, you can't play anybody from this backfield. You just can't. And then, like, I like the targets Corey Davis has been seeing. He's clearly the number one, but Crowder could be there, especially if Wilson's getting pressured a lot. That could lead to more Crowder. Not interested in the tight ends. What are we doing with the Patriots backfield? Is anybody actually in the doghouse?
It's just Damien Harris or bust for me. He was the better player anyways. I'm surprised I'm literally surprised Rhamondre Stevenson was even active. Like, it doesn't matter about his preseason performance. We have 20 years of Belichick history, and we know that this is not how he usually treats his rookies. So just the fact he got on the field was surprising, and then he, of course, fumbled. And Harris did fumble at the end, but had done so much to that point, I'm not sure it even matters. He still handled. Harris did 23 of 29 backfield carries, and so that's what we're kind of chasing and what we believe to be an immense positive game script for the Patriots here.
All right, let's move on. We might have some value in this next game. Denver at Jacksonville. Jerry Jeudy on IR. He'll miss 4 to 6 weeks. I think they're saying it might be closer to 6. So we have some potential value in Denver, right? I mean, these receivers. Sutton was a non-factor in week one. I'm sure he saw a lot of James Bradbury. But there's obviously an immense ceiling here. And then Tim Patrick, a really underrated player that kind of always produces when he's on the field. He's going to be a full-time player now in two receiver sets. Jeudy was in the slot around 70-80% of the time in week one. And if you look, he had, I think, 6 of his 7 targets were from the slot. So KJ Hamler is probably going to fill that role. Probably should have had a touchdown last week. And we know the game breaking ability he has. He can make one play. He can make the day for you on one play. He's 3,800. What are we doing with this Denver receiver group with Jerry Jeudy now out?
So Patrick, as you said, has been a useful fantasy player and just good on the field whenever he's been available. Led Denver in fantasy points from week 10 on last year in place of Cortland Sutton. And that was with like getting ejected for punching someone's helmet at one point, playing the famous Kendall Hilton game. Like there are a lot of reasons that Patrick should not have produced, and yet he did around all that. Having said that, KJ Hamler is obviously the sexy and much more explosive player. We haven't seen KJ Hamler with a high target share just yet, since he's only available for 13 games. But what happened in week one is that, unlike last year when Jerry Jeudy ran nearly 70% of his routes from the boundary, He actually ran 18 of his 23 routes prior to injury from the slot in week one. And who led the Broncos in slot routes by a significant amount? KJ Hamler, of course, who was 260 plus from the slot last year, and no other player on the team was over 100. So I expect KJ Hamler to be the logical fill-in this week. And with Jerry Jeudy's targets, an immense amount after he accrued 110 plus last year, now vacant, it's very possible we see KJ Hamler in the deep ADOT he has with 5 to 7 targets per game. And if that's the case, he pops the lid off. Because for these guys who get volatile deep targets, that's what we want. We want them to get the volatile targets, but we also want them to be like more than, let's say, Van Jefferson, 3 targets. We need them to be high shares. That way we feel much more comfortable taking chances on their hard to catch looks. And so that's what I'm kind of looking forward to here, especially after Teddy Bridgewater not only garnering Pro Football Focus's third highest grade among quarterbacks in week one, but also much more aggressive than he's been historically, throwing 6 balls 20 plus yards downfield. So I think this total actually goes over after Jacksonville has been proven historically. It goes back to last year, not just in week one, they can't stop anyone, but also like this offense seeming much better without Drew Lock finally out of the way.
Yeah, and I think it's just more possessions, right? Like Bridgewater, you mentioned like he was a little bit more aggressive in week one, but just in general, he's not going to be throwing as many reckless passes as Drew Lock, so you get more possessions. And I agree, like I agree with PFF's, you know, rating. Like I thought he looked really good in week one. So I think Hamler's an elite value play. I think you can go to Tim Patrick. It's just hard to get to him when he's almost $1,000 more than Hamler. And I think we'd agree Hamler probably has a higher overall ceiling if you're playing tournaments. Do you think Sutton could be overlooked here because he's priced where he is? He didn't do anything week one. We haven't seen him play really and produce in over a year and a half or whatever. But like, this is such a high ceiling spot. I mean, Jacksonville last year allowed the most receivers to go for 100 plus yards with 10. And then what do they do in week one? Immediately, Brandon Cooks goes for 130 plus yards on like 4 catches. I think Sutton could be like really somehow sneaky in tournaments despite Jeudy being out. I just think the matchup is so good, and if everybody's going to Hamler, I still think there's a chance Sutton could walk into 8 targets in this game. And obviously we can throw Noah Fant into this mix too.
I think that's totally reasonable. You know, it's worrisome, of course, after week one, but then again, that was just week one, especially when we removed Jeudy's targets. I would be more interested in Sutton if we see that Hamler garners a lot of roster percentage. If not,
I think he will.
Okay, if he does, honestly, then that's when you go to Sutton as the tremendous pivot, especially because those targets could just as easily filter to him, who's probably going to be a full-time player again in week 2.
Last week we had, 5 to 7 3K receivers that were all viable. There's maybe a couple. We'll talk about another one in Dallas probably soon. But other than that, like, you know, there's nobody's playing Elijah Moore again. Van Jefferson's down there maybe, but you feel better about Hamler's targets. A lot better than about Hamler's targets. Then it's like Gabriel Davis, he's questionable. Like there's nowhere near as many of viable 3K receivers. So I think that in itself will probably make KJ Hamler pretty popular on this slate. And I don't think he's a bad play, but that could make Sutton super appealing in tournaments.
Yeah, and that's what we're looking at always. It's just ownership numbers, and okay, what's the pivot here? Okay, this is a great pivot. So yeah, I don't mind Cortland Sutton at all. I think Fant is interesting if you're going to go this game or this route as well, since the Broncos did target their tight ends at a league high rate in week one. So I'd be curious to see if that keeps coming around. Even Albert O got involved for 3 targets. Mm-hmm. So that's something interesting to monitor. He had an end zone target. I don't know if he had a touchdown.
I forget if he scored or if Fant scored. No, I think it was Albert O. I know a tight end scored for them, I'm pretty sure.
It probably Albert was. I don't. Oh, Albert, okay, yeah.
Yeah, Albert O scored. So there you go. The backfield was about as much of a split as you could possibly find. But Javonte led the way, and I think they both played 50% of the snaps, but Javonte had 3 more carries. He had more of the short yardage runs. Melvin Gordon breaks a 7-yard run. I'm not playing either of them, but I think it's interesting. I think Javonte Williams on FanDuel, if you really want to go cheap at running back, isn't the worst option. He's like insanely cheap over there. But other than that, like it's right now, it's tough to really get a gauge on playing one in this offense. And then I think if you want to go to Teddy as a value quarterback, like that's probably the lowest I would go. But I get it. Like the matchup is that good.
Yeah, that's fine. Also, I know we haven't moved to the Jaguars backfield just yet, but it's interesting what they did because Urban Meyer as much of a donkey as he is, he literally took James Robinson and turned him into turned him into Damien Williams. He just said, I'm going to give Carlos Hyde the carries, and Carlos Hyde out-touched James Robinson 11-8. But then also, James Robinson ran 36 routes to Hyde's 14. So Robinson still has upside. And if you're playing the logical coaching fallacy, then you can say, well, Robinson's talent will eventually usurp Hyde's. But also, this is Urban Meyer we're talking about. There is literally no gear. I mean, he's running out a 29-year-old seventh-year player as his every-down tight end. There is no logic behind who Urban Meyer plays. And so, like, I actually have my doubts that Robinson will eventually take over for Hyde, too. But if you're thinking negative game script and you're playing, like, one of those running backs, as you mentioned, like the Melvin Gordon, Javonte Williams splits, but then again, Melvin Gordon only had 30 yards rushing on like 13 carries, I believe, until he had that 70-yard touchdown run. So the numbers are a little fluky. Then you could probably look to like James Robinson and negative game scripts.
The Jacksonville receivers, their usage, I mean, they threw the ball so, like, it wasn't even just because they got behind. Like, they had, I think, their first carry didn't come to like the first, or till like the 1 minute mark of the first quarter. So this is going to be a very pass heavy team. They're going to be trailing a lot. I mean, the usage was what we thought it would be, right? Chark and Marvin Jones were the downfield targets. Laviska Shenault's ADOT was like 4, 4.5, but he had like 5 of his 6. Like, he had a ton of touches off screens and jet sweeps. So like, they're manufacturing touches for him. He's 4,900. Chark's 5,600 on DraftKings. Marvin Jones is 4,700. Again, matchup isn't incredible. We did see Sterling Shepard have a really nice game against Denver last week. Do any of these Jacksonville pass catchers interest you?
DJ Chark would be the one I'd chase just because he seems to be like the legitimate threat. Last year, Marvin Jones, of course, was the one that came as like the easiest cash play. He was popping in every model, so everyone just played him. He was probably the one to get off in tournaments last week. But yeah, Chark is still the one I'm interested in. You know, so far, LaVisca's just LaVisca. Just he needs the volume because he's a low ADOT guy, and he's more used like a gadget player as he was last year. And so, like, you know, unless he gets the 7-10 targets, he doesn't really even have a high floor because they're not really using him as an explosive receiver.
Yeah, I agree. I think he's going to be fine every week, but like until he starts to get used more down the field, he's going to have a lot of like 5-catch, 50-yard, and then like maybe 2-carry, 15-yard games, which, you know, they don't really excite you as much as you love LaVisca as a player.
And we don't know what's going to happen yet, but that was always the issue in his rising ADP, like to the Chase Claypool levels. It's because even in college, like, he didn't spike double digit touchdowns. And like in this role, it's basically just rich man's Jarvis Landry. Like, it's not even that exciting, to be honest. So yeah, he just needs to be used differently. Yeah, he needs to be used differently is all. And it just seems like right now, Marvin Jones and DJ Chark, who are good at that role, have that role.
Yeah. This next game, pretty interesting too. San Francisco travels to Philadelphia to take on the Eagles. 45.5 total. I'm looking at the wrong game. 50 is the total. Mm-hmm. San Francisco road favorites here at 3. I think this is interesting. I think the Eagles win this game, by the way. All right, Daigle, before we get to the Eagles, what the hell is going on in San Francisco?
Well, no one knows. like life, everyone wants every decision to be black and white, and that's just not how anything works. It's all gray area, and you have to decipher it, and it's a lot of work to decipher, but it makes it more gratifying as well.
I don't know if you have this. I'm sure you could find it, but in terms of like number of searches on NBC Sports Edge, Brandon Ayuk's got to be like top 5. Like,
yeah, I would say Elijah Mitchell's still more, but sure. Brandon Ayuk is probably second to him. Sure.
So many question marks with both, honestly, but especially Brandon Ayuk.
I would say we're much more hopeful on, well, I'm very hopeful for Elijah Mitchell. We'll get there in a second. But for Brandon Ayuk, I've actually have a couple, like 3 max entries and like a million maker where I'm fine with him, honestly. I can't even suggest him intelligently. He's more like a Hail Mary play, but after he practiced in full on Wednesday from that hamstring injury, and in week 1 he was available as the punt returner, and then they said he's injured, that doesn't add up to me. And yes, he did split snaps and routes with Trent Sherfield well behind Debo Samuel, who garnered a 52% target share. But overall, like, this is absolutely a game that Brandon Ayuk could just come out and scorch if used properly, if he's had a good week of practice. And again, he's practicing in full, so I would think he would. So I don't mind him at all. And plus, like, this is an interesting game that I expect to go well over its total. I was fortunate to get it at Sunday night at 48, knowing that that was too low. And the 49ers are interesting just because you look at their overall plays. Like, the Lions, as everyone has already talked about, led the league with 92 plays run. And then
so
you look
fluky.
Yeah, the 49ers ran only 55 plays. And so you think what happens, but that's because they were literally too good. Like, they were the only team to reach 40 plus points in week
and
one.
And they had a pick six.
Right. Garoppolo led the week with 12 and a half yards per attempt on just 12 and a half, on just 25 throws. And then they were also just one of two teams to average at least 8 yards per play. Like, they were literally just too good. And so if they're going to do that against this Eagles team that made Jalen Hurts, they basically turned Jalen Hurts' arm into an elite one by telling him to throw within 4 yards of the line of scrimmage. Like, Jalen Reagor for his entire career at TCU and last year has been nothing but a deep threat. And then Jalen Reagor had a 1A dot on 6 targets in week one.
He was used like Debo.
Yes, they literally just used him at the line of scrimmage, said break tackles, which they can do because now this San Francisco backfield, which just moved Jason Verrett to IR and Emmanuel Mosley is at practice on the sidelines dealing with a hamstring injury, is potentially looking at starting Josh Norman, who I still thought was in like LA working at Fox, but no, he's actually on a football team. Dre Kirkpatrick, who was just signed on Tuesday, and then rookie cornerback Diamador Lenore, who's going to be in charge of keeping up most likely with Devonta Smith or Reagor. And so either way, like, it's such a tremendous spot for both teams to get there in this matchup.
Yeah, I love that. So Jalen Hurts, I'm glad you brought that up. I love him here. So the Eagles offensive line, I understand they played Atlanta, but their offensive line, look, we know that when they're healthy, they can be really good. And right now, I think Brandon Brooks is not in practice, but I think I saw some beat reporters say they expect him to play. So you have Brandon Brooks, you have Lane Johnson, you have Jason Kelsey, and then Vitae, who just got paid, was incredible in week one. Like, they can have a really good offensive line, and the way they use Jalen Hurts. Last year, Jalen Hurts, like, that's why in so many articles and stuff, everybody's saying, you know, talking about, can you trust Jalen Hurts passing? And I'm like, can we look at how the Eagles used him? They had him take 5-step dropbacks and literally lead the NFL in ADOT. And it's like, he was throwing to whatever was left of Alshon Jeffrey and one game of DeSean Jackson and, you know, Travis Fulgham and Greg Ward. And now what they did in week one, his average at the target was only 3.6. And he, after leading the NFL last year in time to throw at 3.3 seconds, that went down to 2.7. So the ball was getting out faster, and he was making that touchdown. He had to Dallas Goedert was incredible. So I love Hurts, and you have to love Devonta Smith, how he was used. He was really used as a wide receiver one, which makes sense given the fact that he is their wide receiver one. I like that stack a lot in this game. And then obviously Jalen Hurts is going to give you the rushing. He has at least 60 rushing yards or a touchdown in every one of his starts dating back to last season. So love that duo. The backfield, kind of surprising, right? Like, we thought Boston Scott was the number two all offseason. He's deemed active for the first game, doesn't play a snap, and it's all Kenny Gainwell, who also played in the two-minute drill. Does that make you – and I thought Miles Sanders did look good in that game against Atlanta, but Gainwell got the short yardage touchdown. Are you interested in Sanders at all in this backfield, or is it Hurts and Devonta Smith? And then I guess we can mention Goddard, because Zach Ertz hasn't been practicing. He might actually be legitimately questionable for this game.
Sure, I'd be interested in Sanders. He looked great, to your point. And also, his splits with Jalen Hurts are pretty juicy, and that was with a different coaching staff, as was Goddard's stats last year when he ran a route on 89% of the team's dropbacks in four games without Zach Ertz. But either way, I think anyone's in play. Like you mentioned Devonta Smith, I also think Jalen Reagor's in play, honestly. He has a very high floor if he's being used like that. And with the bodies I mentioned in San Francisco secondary, of course he can beat those guys. He can break those tackles. So anyone's in play. It's also interesting that the Eagles ran at the league's fastest pace in the first half. And then when they had a lead in the second half, they actually slowed way down to a bottom three rate. They just protected their lead. And so if this stays competitive throughout, this game is probably faster than we think as well.
Yeah, it's a great point. And, you know, San Francisco, they gave up 8 yards per play to the Lions last week. So, like, their defense, you mentioned the secondary, like, it's not that, you know, Quintez Cephas and the receivers did much, but, like, they gave up. And, again, the plays were fluky by Detroit because they got an onside kick, and then there was the late Debo fumble that gave them more snaps. So, a little bit fluky in that regard. But, like, yeah, if the Lions can find some success on offense against you, then I think the Eagles very well can and will. And I also, by the way, love bringing it back with George Kittle in this game. Just absolutely love it. The usage wasn't incredible, but per usual, the efficiency was for George Kittle. And if this game, because San Francisco kind of just coasted when they went up, like, what, 31, 38 to 10 or something, like, they just coasted. And it's like, we don't need George Kittle. So this game stays close, high total. Kittle can have, you know, 10, 11 targets and absolutely smash. So I like bringing it back with him. Before we get out of this game, what are we doing with Elijah Mitchell? Are we playing him? Do we think, I mean, Trey Sermon's got to be active for this game, right?
Well, they signed Trenton Cannon on Wednesday. Right. Cannon plays special teams. So to ask if for sure Sermon's active? No. Like, I mean, I'm not ruling anything out with this backfield. So if Sermon is inactive Sunday morning, then I'm going all in on Elijah Mitchell, because they've also proven they don't care about Jamichael Hasty. Like, they've given Jamichael Hasty more than 6 touches in one game, and that was the game that Jerick McKinnon was active for Jeff Wilson, Tevin Coleman last year, and Raheem Mostert, because they were all injured. And then Jerick McKinnon got injured in that game, and that's when they had to use Jamichael Hasty. Even in week one, with only 2 backs available after Mostert got injured, Mitchell handled an 83% backfield touch share, which is the highest share of any back for the 49ers going back to last year. And so, like, they just don't care about Hasty at all. So, like, if we know Sermon is going to get scratched Sunday morning, then we definitely go to Mitchell. Otherwise, every range of outcomes possible. Sermon could lead in touches. Sermon could split touches. Sermon could not get a single touch if Shannon, like, was telling the truth and just said he sucks. Like, what do you want me to do? So, like, we don't know. And especially if, like, the ownership numbers come in with Sermon and Mitchell is highly rostered, which I expect him to be, then I don't mind passing on that, especially because I don't really see him as a pass catching running back. Or at least not one that's going to get many targets. His explosiveness, he can definitely get there on 2 to 3 targets. But that's not something I really want to chase on DraftKings. So it's really just going to come down to that and Sermon situation for me.
All right, cool. Let's move on to the Rams and Colts. Daigle, the last time you were on this podcast, you were trying, I believe, to talk Tyler Higbee up to me and Debro, and we just weren't on it. And look, I know it's only week one, but I'm here to take the L. I think Higbee is in line for an awesome season. Just look at the usage in week one, man. Literally played every snap, ran a route on 26 of Stafford's 27 dropbacks. I think he ran like 5 or 4 more routes than he averaged per game last year. Talented player. Like, the offense, it's 1 week, but this offense looks like it's going to be borderline elite. I think Tyler Higbee would be my favorite player from this entire game if Cooper Kupp's price tag wasn't broken on both sides. He's literally 6K on both DraftKings and FanDuel.
He's an awesome play. There are a lot of ways to go in this game because, well, we just saw the Rams offense in week one, like, be one of the most explosive. As we mentioned earlier, the Bears allowed a week one high 12 yards per attempt through the air, but also Higbee in play, Cooper Kupp in play. And these teams obviously performed vastly different, and like the Colts getting pummeled and the Rams being able to do whatever they want. But also, this is the first time all year the Rams are leaving the West Coast since training camp and all of their preseason games were actually in that time zone in their city. So just the fact that they had to get up for a Sunday night primetime game and now travel across the country to Indianapolis, I do think there's some interesting narrative and like a reason to buy into the Colts +4. Having said that, we need Quentin Nelson and or Darius Leonard to play, because if one of those two are out, the Colts are done. Like, they just can't, they're not talented enough to win without either of those players. So it doesn't matter.
And if Darius Leonard's out, I mean, even more wheels up.
They can't stop. They literally don't have a chance of stopping the Rams at all. Like, he's the one factor you need. But if they're all in, Quentin Nelson especially, then we can just look to last week's stats and say, okay, Rams defense, who we had questions about. They have, you know, obviously two of the best positional players in Jalen Ramsey and Aaron Donald, but Brandon Staley knew where to put them. Whereas I have my doubt still what they're doing now is the same thing. And that proved to so far be true in week one, since they were just 1 of 5 units to allow over 5 yards per carry to Montgomery, right? And then you imagine that's exactly how they want to play, the Colts do, with Jonathan Taylor after Carson Wentz took 15 quarterback hits and 4 sacks because he held the ball for over 3 seconds every play, because that's what Carson Wentz does.
I was going to say, nothing's changed.
Yeah, and Taylor encouragingly saw a career-high 7 targets to go along with the 17 carries over Nyheim Hines' 9. And so, like, there is a real chance that the Colts compete in this game. And if that's the case, Taylor is going to 100% come in under rostered compared to Najee Harris, Zeke Elliott, Austin Eckler, when he has obviously the same range of outcomes as all of those guys. So if we get all of them healthy, Jonathan Taylor is going to be my favorite tournament play in DFS this week.
Yeah. And like, yeah, Nyheim Hines was heavily involved in the passing game like he always is, but like I think that's more of an indictment on the receiver situation they have right now. And Jonathan Taylor, like, these two led the team in targets. Like, you like that usage. And yeah, I mean, I think the Rams last year didn't allow a single 100 yard rusher, and then Montgomery goes for 100 plus in week one. So Taylor is very he's gonna be like 6% rostered, I would
say. Yeah, no one's gonna play him after last week.
Yeah, something along those lines, like 6%. So that's a really good call. I love Higbee here, 4,100, I believe, on DraftKings. One of my favorite tight end plays this slate, just given the usage. Gerald Everett and Will Disley just got this team for a combined 5 for 60 and a touchdown. Darius Leonard doesn't play. That's even better for Tyler Higbee. And like, it was interesting to see, and this is maybe more of a Seattle being Seattle thing, and Russ and Lockett having like the best connection on deep passes in the NFL. But like, the past couple years, it's been a zone-heavy team that limits the deep passing plays, and they just got destroyed by Lockett and Wilson. But like, maybe like in general, this is the spot where I think tight ends can find success. So I love Higbee. Cooper Kupp's price tag is broken on both sides, like I mentioned. Do you have any concern about Robert Woods' routes in week one?
No, Robert Woods will be just fine. Having said that, I do like, you know, Cooper Kupp's easy because his salary really didn't go up. And against the Colts, who we know are going to run, be like top five or eight in zone, he's the kind of guy that plants into zone and will make easy catches. I also, if we think the Colts are going to compete, like in a Millie Maker format, you know, I don't know what really stakes your listeners play, but you know, if you're in the $1, $3, $5 with like 100K entries, I don't think Van Jefferson's a bad play.
I'm going to be playing Van Jefferson in some lineups.
So we only saw three targets for an 11% share, but finished second.
Only threw 27 times.
Exactly. Finished second on the team in routes run ahead of Robert Woods and DeSean Jackson, because they basically used Van Jefferson as DeSean Jackson as he led the team in air yards. And again, not prayer yards, because it's Matthew Stafford. Those are true air yards. And he had a 20.
Those are like arguably the best air yards outside of Mahomes and maybe like Josh Allen. Like, those are Stafford air yards are what we like.
And he had a 29 ADOT. So if the Colts that are all competitive and we get a full tree for Van Jefferson and more snaps, like, those are the kind of targets with a higher target share and a competitive game script that I absolutely want to chase.
Before we go to the next game, any interest in Daryl Henderson, who was the every down running back, 90 plus percent of the snaps? The price is still fair. I think the matchup is literally middle of the road for him. Like, I think that's the best way to put it. And the price tag is pretty fair, too. Like, I think Henderson is like the definition of like a very fine play. 5,700 on DraftKings. He handled all of the short yardage work, all the inside the five carries for the Rams. And like I said, like, this offense, I know it's only week one, but they look like they could be like just incredible this year.
Yes, and my only concern after Sony Michel played literally just one snap is that Sony Michel is still here. Like, he's still lurking. He's still learning the playbook. We knew he was questionable. He was active, and then he was not involved in a, you know, like 20-point trouncing. Whatever. Who cares? But, like, Sony Michel is still coming. So I just wonder how much more, if he will, be involved. But if the game script, like, goes awry because they can't get the Colts, Leonard, or Nelson on the field, maybe like Daryl Henderson is the right pivot under rostered.
All right, let's go to Vegas at Pittsburgh. This is a tough spot for Vegas. It's coming off that, you know, incredible last minute overtime thrilling win against the Ravens. Banged up offensive line still. Josh Jacobs is banged up. Now they're missing two pieces on their defensive line potentially. Now you got to travel to Pittsburgh for a 1 o'clock game, 47 point total, Steelers favored by 6. I'm starting to get, and it's only Thursday, but from, you know, Twitter and stuff like that, I'm starting to get the vibe that Najee Harris, you know, opposite of last week, is going to be pretty popular. 6,300. I don't know if you know this, John Daigle, but Najee Harris played 100% of the snaps in week one.
I hadn't heard that, actually.
Clear sarcasm there, but he did. And that's what we maybe not expected to that extent, but we knew he'd be an every down player. Just missed a couple of receiving touchdowns, honestly, in this game. He was close. The Bills stacked the box against the Steelers, kind of like they did in week 14 of last year, because the Steelers have no threat of a downfield passing attack. So what the Bills do is they just bring Poyer and Hyde down into the box. Different matchup here, obviously, still really cheap, and he's going to get 20 opportunities and 90 plus percent of the snaps. Is Najee Harris to you somebody you want to go back to if you played him last week?
Yes, of course. I mean, no one's going to argue against Najee Harris. And the best part is, like, whether you did not draft him because the offensive line sucks, and maybe Najee Harris sucks, we don't know, or you drafted him because he's going to get all the touches, the fact is everyone was right. Let's have a party together. But in this game, like you said, it sets up immensely well. Almost an impossible spot for the Raiders after – you know, Yannick Ngakoue suffers a hamstring injury, may not go. Denzel Good, offensive lineman, sent to IR. Richie Cognito looking doubtful with a calf injury.
He's out for the year now.
Right. Not to mention the fact the Raiders are 3-8 against the spread under Gruden when traveling from West to East Coast. So it's just legitimately the perfect spot for Najee Harris. Having said that, if he comes in high roster, which I fully expect him to do, then I think you can also pivot to the receivers and the passing game. Now, the issue with the passing game, if you go Roethlisberger, remember, in tournaments, if you're in, you're in. You don't even have to believe the situation. But if you're in, you're in. Thus, you have to double stack Roethlisberger, because really the only way for that lineup you created to win in tournaments anyways is for Roethlisberger to match the Allen, Kyler Murray's, like the power, Russ, the powerhouses on the same slate. So you pretty much have to double stack them. Then again, there's nothing wrong with double stacking him with Harris as well, knowing the targets will hopefully be there. The targets were not as much as I would like to think they'll continue to be in week one. I think it's going to grow from there, though. So just to know, like, if you go the passing game, if you're in, you're in. Other, like, pretty much if you don't play Roethlisberger and you play receiver, you have to fade Harris, because that's just the way tournaments work.
Yeah, and you know the first player you're stacking, it's Diontae Johnson. He has double-digit targets in, like, 10 of or 11 of his last 12 games. That he hasn't left early, and that continued last week. So, and they ran three wide a little bit more than I thought. We started to see a lot of 12 personnel from the Steelers in the preseason. They were still three wide, I think, like 70%+ of the time last week. It was still Juju as the number two and then Chase Claypool, but there's obviously upside with Claypool. I don't hate Roethlisberger, but I do agree. Like, if you're going to play him, you have to stack him with Deontay and somebody else at the minimum. But it's a good matchup, obviously. I think the Raiders' pressure rate was good against Baltimore last week, so that's maybe the slightest concern, but their D-line is banged up, and Ngakoue banged up, and they missed 11 tackles in week one. I think that was the most in the NFL, so still a lot of upside for the Steelers' offense, especially with Vegas traveling to the East Coast after a thrilling Monday night win. I think it sets up really nicely for Pittsburgh. For Vegas, I mean, Josh Jacobs is banged up, and he's got maybe the worst matchup outside of Tampa Bay for a running back. No thanks. Waller's obviously the volume machine, 19 targets. I'm not saying Waller's a bad play, but I don't know. This doesn't seem like a great spot for Vegas. I'm not really too interested.
Yeah, I don't have any clue what to do with their receivers, nor do I care to. Waller, of course, you can play. Again, there's no Kelsey, so Waller's the option. And, like, I even at least came into the week thinking Minkah Fitzpatrick is like a great matchup, which he is. But you know what? Matchups don't matter when Waller's getting 19 targets and a 40% target share. Who cares about matchups? It could be Jalen Ramsey, and it doesn't matter because Waller's getting 19 targets. So,
I mean, like, they had Marlon Humphrey on him a lot last game, and it didn't matter either. So,
right. And that's kind of the way I look at it. With the receivers, again, this is even for redraft leagues too. Hunter Renfrow finished with 10 fewer targets, but did lead the team's wideouts and opportunities, 10 fewer targets than Waller. Edwards didn't record his first reception or target until 7-10 remaining in the third quarter, and Henry Ruggs led the team in air yards. And so, like, you can parse all that together however you want for redraft leagues or playing a receiver here, but to me, that just all spells hell no. Like, I'm just going to shy away from all that.
Yeah. I'm with you. I'm not playing any Raiders. I'm probably not even going to play Waller because I do like Kittle a lot. And I just, 7,600 for Waller, it's fine. But, like, I just don't love the Raiders in general here.
There are a few good options, honestly. We already passed through Higbee, who's a great option if you play, especially if you play Taylor too. We already talked about Goddard. If Zach Ertz misses, that'll become popular. Fant's a good one. And then also, there's still one more big one to come against the Bucs, of course.
Let's move on to the NFC South, New Orleans at the Carolina Panthers. Welcome back, Christian McCaffrey. 30 touches, dominates the snaps. Do we need to say anything about Christian McCaffrey? I know the Saints have been a good run defense. Doesn't matter. McCaffrey's getting, Stephon Diggs type usage almost in the passing game. Like, it's if you can afford him, Christian McCaffrey's probably going to get you 30. He got 30 fantasy points last week, didn't score a touchdown.
Right. It was the nut run out if you faded him in week one, because, like, that kind, not getting the 5-point bonus for 100 yards or scoring a touchdown is exactly what you want to see when you fade a 10K player. Because there's nothing wrong with fading a 10K player. There's nothing wrong with fading McCaffrey this week. You just have to know what you have to get properly in order to fade him. And like that was literally the nut situation to fade him. The issue is a lot of us faded him for Najee Harris, and you know that didn't turn out too well.
No, it didn't. So McCaffrey, obviously elite. I really like DJ Moore a lot here. I loved how they used him in week one. His yards before the catch, perception, and ADOT were down by about 3 yards compared to last year. He was used kind of all over the field, whereas last year we know he was more of the main deep threat. Was clearly the number two, you know, 1A in terms of the entire offense, but he was clearly the number one receiver in terms of targets. 5,900. The Saints probably going to be without Marshawn Lattimore in this game. I think that's a really nice price tag for DJ Moore, who is always going to be a high yardage guy, right? He's, I think, at over 80 yards in week one. He's been top 10 in yardage each of the last two seasons in the NFL. And I just think that he's a really strong play there. And that's probably it from this team for me.
That is honestly about it for me as well. I think you summed it up well.
All right, cool. Let's go to the Saints. Jameis Winston, touchdown rate. The LASIK surgery is off to a great start. I mean, was that, that's got to be like one of the five most bizarre week one games I've ever seen. Like, not that, and I talk about this to D-Bro because he's a Saints fan. Not that the Saints, and nobody expected the Saints to be a bad team this year without Breeze and Michael Thomas, but like 38-3 week one against Green Bay, like wild game. Alvin Kamara had 20 carries again. He very quietly, dating back to last season, has 20 plus carries in three of his last four games. The passing game usage wasn't there. Obviously, they didn't need him to catch passes in this game. What do you think of the Saints here with Kamara? Tony Jones, by the way, looked good. I don't think we're playing him, but he looked good as well. And then the tight end situation, right? Johnson got the touchdowns, but he did not. He played, I think, 12 snaps, ran 9 routes. Adam Troutman, he had the usage you want to chase.
The interesting thing is that 8 of Jones's 12 touches occurred while the Saints were still building their 10-0 lead. So like he was involved in an important game script with Alvin Kamara as well. Given the routes, I'm still chasing Kamara, of course, because he's one of the best players in the league. But it is like slightly concerning that he was basically involved more than they had involved Latavius Murray even.
And he looked, I thought he looked really good. Like yeah, he was running really hard.
Yeah, I did not expect him to carry though. Perhaps standalone value. And, you know, if this usage continues in a competitive game script, then he might. For Adam Troutman, I mean, if everyone's going to chase Juwan Johnson, it's just wrong. Juwan Johnson ran 10 routes, saw 3 targets, scored on 2 of them. Now, both of them were inside the 10, and perhaps that continues happening. But if so, he's just Foster Moreau, and you're not playing Foster Moreau every week, so who cares? The fact that Adam Troutman had, like you said, the team-high 30% target share and then ran 18 routes on Jameis Winston's 24 dropbacks, like that's the kind of usage we chase despite the box score. So we are going back to Troutman if need be as well in this game.
Yeah, if you're kind of punting tight end, I think he's one of the best options, right? Like, and we didn't talk about, like James O'Shaughnessy for Jacksonville ran a ton of routes. Like if you can get up to Troutman, I would just obviously rather play Troutman. So I think he's very viable. I'm perfectly fine with Kamara. Like you said, he's just that dude. He's one of the best players in football. I'm not on the receivers though. I'm not on Callaway. I'm not on Deontay Harris. It's really it. It's kind of a simple game. And I'm not really on Jameis, like despite what we saw. Like he looked good, but not that touchdown rate is absurd.
Callaway would be the one I chase, but like I don't believe the Deontay Harris, especially when he finished 4th on the team in routes run. I just wonder what happens whenever the Saints are in a competitive game script. Like, does Jameis go back to being a pumpkin and being Jameis? Because at the same time,
well, out of room for error in that last game.
Yeah, it would definitely lead to turnovers, but also it would lead to fantasy goodness after he only threw 2 passes 20 plus yards downfield, and he kept 20% of his passes at the line of scrimmage. Like Sean Payton clearly told him, don't you dare screw this up. And he played a very conservative, albeit efficient quarterback. And so whenever like push comes to shove, I do think he turns back to Jameis. And if that's the case this game, because I do think the Panthers are in a really good spot for an upset, then I think the Callaway would be the guy we want.
All right, let's move on to Minnesota at the Arizona Cardinals. This game's got some definite shootout appeal, I think. Minnesota went really pass heavy in that last game too. Obviously they were trailing a little bit, but just in general, 51 point total right now. Arizona favored by 3.5 at home. Kyler was awesome. I don't think we need to say much about Kyler or DeAndre Hopkins. If you want to play them, go for it. They're awesome. Minnesota secondary still, I think, a weakness despite some of the improvements they made. They got really, you know, just I would have loved to see the numbers Burrow and company could have put up if they actually threw the ball a lot in that last game. So, and the backfield was kind of a split like we thought. Edmonds clearly the pass catching back, and I think Connor was used more in short yardage, which we expected. What do you think of the Cardinals here? Like, because you can talk about Kyler and DeAndre if you want. I just don't think there's a ton of analysis needed. They're great.
Or which ones? I'm sorry.
I'm for the Cardinals. I mean, like Kyler and Hopkins are great, and then the backfield. Like, do we? It was kind of a split, but Edmonds was the passing downs back. Like, do we go to anybody on this team that isn't Kyler and Hopkins? I mean, I know Kirk had the touchdowns, but he was still clearly running as a wide receiver three behind AJ Green and Hopkins.
So for Edmonds, that was actually the best case scenario. That was awesome. Because at least for week one, we found out they're using James Conner as Carlos Hyde, which is a player like basically only want in really deep leagues. Mm-hmm. Conner out carried Edmonds 16-12, but 8 of those carries came on Arizona's last two drives. Yeah. where they were up 38-13, and he ran the fewest routes of any player on the team. Meanwhile, Edmonds was significantly more efficient on his carries, over 5 yards per attempt compared to Conner's 3.3. And then Edmonds also hoarded 100% of the running back targets and ran the third most routes on the team ahead of even Christian Kirk. So like Edmonds, that was awesome. Like, you should be excited if you have Edmonds for that usage in one of the league's most explosive offenses. For Kirk and Moore, it's just going to vary. It's literally just going to depend when AJ Green gets out of the way. And they will have ceiling games in between then. It's just going to be harder to expect them because AJ Green still had 6 targets, still was second on the team in routes run. But also, it's AJ Green. Like, his peripherals don't matter at this stage of his career. And I hate it sucks because I don't want to bury him because I've loved watching him as a player. But also, it's bad whenever people come on and like are just sight in the industry. Well, like AJ Green has these numbers, but as again, it comes down to context, and we know those numbers for AJ Green don't matter at all. Christian Fulton was bullying him in the end zone. Like, he's just not going to catch a pass. It doesn't matter. So he is not a legacy player like Larry Fitzgerald. They could not take Fitzgerald off the field because fans would burn the stadium to the ground. They can see AJ Green's performance in a month in and take him off the field. And that's what I think is going to happen eventually and allow Kirk and Moore to work their way more in, especially after both played at least 96% of the routes from the slot. So once we get them working more on the outside and the slot in 3 wide sets, and AJ Green is the lesser used option, that's when this one offense really takes off further.
Yeah, and I thought Rondell looked really good. Awesome. A ton of yards after contact per reception, using the screen game. Like, he looked awesome. So he's going to be a guy that I'm excited to watch in this offense, and I'll be playing him a lot in tournaments. I played him last week. And I think the playing times, it has to go up if you just look at what he brings to this offense. For Minnesota, I mean, is Adam Thielen ever going to stop scoring touchdowns? By the way, Justin Jefferson, his game should have been much better. He scored. We'll be honest, like, he scored. He was in the end zone. But Thielen, like, the interesting thing with Thielen was when Jefferson kind of came onto the scene last year, Thielen's yardage per game was terrible. 92 yards in the opener with 2 touchdowns. Like, that was pretty encouraging for Adam Thielen if you were worried about him kind of coming back down to earth this year. Obviously, it's only week one, but what do we think of the Vikings offense?
It was continued concerted usage for Adam Thielen in the red zone. That has always been the case, as was the case again, because whatever you think of as, you know, this stage of his career, he's still very good at separating inside the 10, and he's a very trustworthy option. Kirk Cousins also has thrown multiple touchdowns in 9 of his past 10 games. And honestly, like, he's such a great option in this slate. The issue is you have to double stack him, just like I was talking about with Roethlisberger. Mm-hmm. Because, like, if again, to win tournaments, you have to win. You have to ask yourself,
especially you got to double stack some of those, like Cousins and Roethlisberger, because they're not running. So you need to make up for it.
Exactly. And Kirk Cousins absolutely in this game, in this slate, has 300 yard, four touchdown capability. Absolutely. But again, he has to compete with the same score as Allen, Russ, Kyler. Like, you're not only fading one or two players, you're fading an entire slate. So you'd have to go Jefferson and Thielen, and then you'd have to hope KJ Osborne doesn't accrue as many targets. It seems like he's going to be involved as they pivoted to more 11 personnel, three wide sets, by the way, without Irv Smith. KJ Osborne in on 81% of the snaps, got the same 19% target share behind Adam Thielen's 21% as Jefferson did. But I still view him, obviously, as the inferior receiver, and so I think it's going to be harder for him to continue accruing that share of targets. So if it goes down, that means someone else goes up, and you have to hope that that is Thielen and Jefferson together if you play Cousins.
Yeah, that was probably one of the more under or overlooked aspects of week one, was how much more the Vikings went three wide, which makes sense when Irv Smith was essentially being used as a wide receiver anyway for that offense in the preseason and training camp. So it's definitely something to keep an eye on. I think Dalvin Cook's obviously always fine in tournaments, but the one thing we're not taking into consideration with projections and analysis for this game is how many sacks is Chandler Jones going to have?
That is a terrific question. But then again, and we'll talk about that in a second, that more or less, in my opinion, came down to the Titans scheme and just their offensive line and offense as a whole, which, by the way, we're worried about. We're absolutely worried about the Titans.
Yeah, we'll talk about them in a second. But first, got to go to Atlanta and Tampa Bay. Speaking of offenses that we could be worried about, Atlanta did not put forth a very inspiring effort against the Eagles in week one. Now they have to travel to face Tampa Bay, who just blitzed Dak Prescott over 50% of the time. And let me ask you this. Are you more encouraged, or because there's a lot of talk about Kyle Pitts, like there kind of always is in the fantasy community. Like, he obviously didn't have a good game, but he had 8 targets tied with Calvin Ridley. They used him all over the field. Now his snaps were pretty close to Hayden Hurst, but like, it's not like he's playing one for one tight end versus tight end, because they're using Pitts as a receiver too. So what do you think of Ridley and this offense with do you look at their pass and run rates in this game against the Eagles in week one and say, okay, they kind of just mailed it in at one point? Because if they're going to keep running the football down by 20 points, like, I'm going to be pissed. But like, again, it's week one, and maybe they just said, you know what, we're not winning this game. Let's just move on to next week.
The Falcons?
Yeah.
They were abysmal. Jesus. And it came down to the trenches, because they could not protect Matt Ryan at all. They tried to run play action. Arthur Smith did in the first quarter. It's a lot like the Titans offense, actually, which is why we have a lot of questions still about these offenses. But when they did that, Matt Ryan got obliterated. Like, they could not hold up at all against Fletcher Cox. And it's a concern, since it's not really a good offensive line to begin with. And so we just have no clue what they are.
Good thing they're not facing a good defensive line this week. Oh, wait.
That's just exactly it. Cordarrelle Patterson actually led the league in 10-plus yard runs with 4, but all of them came in the first quarter. They had 84 rushing yards in the first quarter and then were limited to 34 over the next 3, because the Philadelphia just put the clamps down and said, all right, no more of this. We now see what you're doing. And so I'm very concerned, because they led the league, the Falcons did, in 12 personnel as well. But also, like, teams only have to cover 2 players. You cover Calvin Ridley and you cover Kyle Pitts. And the Eagles figured that out, because then when Ryan started jamming targets to Hayden Hurst and Russell Gage, what do you think happens? Nothing. They don't move the chains, because it's Hayden Hurst and Russell Gage. And so I'm very, very concerned. Like, teams have already figured out the Falcons offense. Having said that, in a divisional spot, up-tempo game script, you would hope the offense has changed. You would hope. But the usage for Ridley and Pitts was still so good. Pitts just a runner route on 80% of Ryan's dropbacks, and still have the 8 targets he had. Tremendous usage. So we are still not worried about Pitts just yet. But would we have liked to seen something better when we are arguing the player is going to buck an historical narrative for a whole position? Yes, we would have liked to have been better.
In regards to the slate, like, do you have interest in Ridley or Pitts? And I'm assuming you're not touching anybody like Mike Davis against this front. No, thank you. I mean, nobody's going to play them. Maybe Kyle Pitts, just because the appeal is still there. But I don't think I want to pay $5,200 for Kyle Pitts.
Well, if you don't want to pay $5,200 for Kyle Pitts, then you like you have to think, well, this is the time that no one wants to pay $5,200 per copy. So, and like again, the usage was amazing. And of course he can match like Darren Waller in efficiency and production if he's the same player we thought he was in week one. So like I'm not saying I'm gonna get there, but I'm saying like it's a good play. It really is.
Tampa Bay,
I get the sentiment though. I completely get the sentiment. Yeah. But again, if he comes in at like 4%, that's a really good play.
Yeah, and you like how they moved him all over the formation, and he's still an immensely talented player. And I'm hoping that game in week one was the worst performance we see from Atlanta all year, but we'll see. It could be, I mean, who knows? It could be this week. They're facing arguably the best team in the NFL. For Tampa Bay, I mean, Ronald Jones is starting, in case you were wondering.
yeah, whatever Bruce that means.
Arians, unreal. But in all seriousness, like, great spot for anybody, right? Mike Evans was you know, had the down game last week. He was actually shadowed by Trevon Diggs on like 80% of his routes, and Trevon Diggs did a great job. He even followed him into the slot. Atlanta doesn't have, you know, Trevon Diggs isn't like a top 10 corner. He's good, but Atlanta doesn't even have anybody as good as Trevon Diggs. So, I mean, Evans is due for a bounce back. You love the usage from Chris Godwin and Antonio Brown, even though Antonio Brown wasn't on the field much, and if at all, in two receiver sets, like he still has a clear rapport with Tom Brady. Like they're just going to put up points in this game. I guess the best way to ask for Tampa Bay is how do you each week kind of decipher who you like the most? Or is it just if you're running a ton of lineups, you should probably get some exposure to Evans, Antonio Brown, Chris Godwin, obviously Tom Brady. And then Gronk, I thought looked great in week one.
Yes, and it's also Gronk's usage just to run around on 37 of Tom Brady's 50 dropbacks. Like, that's incredible. He was legitimately a full-time player. OJ Howard didn't even accrue a target, and it's because, obviously, he got in the training camp and summer reps this offseason, whereas last year at this time, he was a WWE champion. It makes a huge huge difference. And so that he's a tremendous play, and then when you're trying to filter through the Bucs receivers – honestly, I just don't think you're going to figure it out. You just play the two, if you're double stacking Brady, that are going to be the least rostered, because in 9 regular season games together, they've all averaged literally 7.5 targets per game. Yep. Godwin has one more fantasy point than both, 16.8 to Evans's 15.8 and Antonio Brown's 15.6 in that span. So there's really no right or wrong answer. You can go great either way. I would just probably lean Evans as one of them for sure, just due to roster percentage. That's it.
All right. Before we get to the last two games, I want to remind everybody about Top Prop Sports. Awesome place to add more competitiveness, more smack talk to your redraft leagues. Go to Top Prop Sports. You import your league, whether it's on CBS, Yahoo, whatever site you're playing on. You invite your league mates. You enter your email and use the code FTN, and you can play weekly cash prizes against your league mates in your matchup. So you don't have to wait till the end of the season to win some cash prizes in your redraft league. Really fun way to add more competitiveness to redraft. That's topropsports.com. Tennessee, Seattle, Daigle. How popular are Russ and DK and Lockett going to be, especially after last week and especially after watching Tennessee secondary, who everybody knew coming into last week was bad. And now they have to face an offense that should probably actually be able to move the football. I mean, just smash spot.
I do wonder how much they'll be rostered, especially DK, when there's no correct answer. The correct answer is always who is less rostered among these two receivers. I'm going to play them. But Seattle did walk the walk with Shane Waldron, ranking second in play action, seventh in no huddle rate, scorching the Colts for 11 yards per attempt through the air and 7.8 yards per play. They literally either threw the ball 20 plus yards downfield or threw it the line of scrimmage, the shallow level. It was dink and dunk. Like, it was dink, then dunk. That's
and there was a lot of pre-snap motion, too. Like, it was
absolutely.
Like, this is what I was, you know, the last 2 months before the season started, I was saying, you know what? After watching what Russ did in the first half last year, and now they bring in Shane Waldron, I need to just load up on this passing offense just in case, because we know Russell Wilson can put MVP-type numbers up in the right consistent offense. And I think with Shane Waldron, this very well could be it.
It's always been that way. So, yes, that is correct. And for Seattle, that's the thing. We have no worries about their offense against the Titans defense. Kyler's great, but I think everyone still overreacted to the fact he was playing the Titans defense. Every quarterback who plays them this year is going to look like an MVP. Russ is going to look like an MVP because they are that bad. They don't have any talent at all, especially as Bud Dupree continues mending. And so I expect the Seahawks to carry their own weight. But whether you play DK or Chris Carson comes down to what the Titans do, and we don't know. You pretty much just have
Carson in tournaments.
You have to ask yourself, do I think the Titans offense is much better than this? And thus we can play them or Seattle, because there's actually going to be fighting each other in this game. Again, it's not the Titans stopping the Seattle. They're not going to stop them. It's literally a matter of this is going to be a high scoring affair. Or do you say, no, this Titans offense actually does suck after running the second to last rate of play action, only ahead of the Raiders in week one. And also when they ran play action in the first quarter, Ryan Tannehill was walloped by Chandler Jones because Taylor Lewan couldn't protect a single soul out there. And so if that's the case, you play Chris Carson, because that's when likely they get Carson involved after he handled 19 of 23 backfield touches, out carried both Rashad Penny and DJ Dallas by a combined 16-3. And he ran 19 routes to Penny's 4. So even when Penny went out, they used Carson as the third down back, which is tremendous. That gives them like a low end RB1 ceiling. And if we think it's a positive game script for them, like Carson is the run back. That's the pivot here.
I will tell you right now, Chris Carson is probably my favorite GPP play this week. Everybody's going to go to the passing options on both sides of the ball here, I would think, especially the Seattle side. Like, it's a great play. But Carson at 6'1", with the usage he had, Rashad Penny's probably not going to play this week anyway. Like, I absolutely love Chris Carson in tournaments. The lack of play action for Tennessee was definitely alarming. A.J. Brown got there. Julio had a rough game. The timing and rapport with Tannehill wasn't quite there. He dropped an end zone touchdown. Derrick Henry, like... Henry could be interesting. It's to your point, though. Like, if Tennessee's offense, just if there's an actual problem with the offensive line and the change in coordinator, then this could be alarming. But it's very possible that in this game they can just go out and put up 31 and we get like a 35-31 type of game. So I am going to have some exposure to Henry and, you know, run it back with the Seattle pass catchers, and then, you know, vice versa with A.J. Brown, who I think is pretty underpriced still. Tannehill's the one I'm not sure if I'm going to get to, just because like Jalen Hurts is right around him in price and he's not too far off the two quarterbacks we're going to talk about in this last game. But anybody else we haven't talked about from this game? Like, what do you think of the Tennessee receivers?
I mean, genuinely, we don't know. But Julio Jones couldn't even separate in week one. A.J. Mm-hmm. Brown is still very clearly injured. It just really comes down to, will they be as efficient with Tannehill, or is this finally the regression that's occurring from the past 2 years when we expected it? I mentioned the play action rate stat. It's because it's very important. Tannehill averaged 11 yards per attempt from play action since going under center, when he's only averaged 7.6 without it. And so to not run it is egregious, because that's how he's been very effective when he's genuinely, for his entire career, even at Texas A&M, been a below league average, below nation average quarterback. But actually, Arthur Smith helped unlock him. So is Downing going to see that and unlock him? I genuinely don't know. I just know that this game is very important in either direction we spin it. That's how I know I'm going to play either DK Metcalf if I think the Titans keep up. I may not even run it back. I may just run DK Metcalf, or plays Chris Carson with Seattle's defense possibly. I don't know which way yet, but I think you need to play but one of them.
Yeah, I agree. I do love Chris Carson.
And
I think,
and by the way, if you double stack the Titans, that's okay too. Like, yeah, you're just selling yourself that, okay, they're back, no big deal. And I don't mind that at all. I just genuinely don't know. I don't have an answer at all.
And that's okay. Like, we try to always have answers as, you know, analysts or whatever, but like sometimes we just don't know.
Slate breaking variance.
Right, like in the offseason, I would get a lot of questions about like Odell Beckham and Cortland Sutton. Those are two players I literally didn't know what to expect. I literally would just tell people, like, I don't know. I have no clue what to expect. So sometimes we just don't know. But if Tennessee's offense can get back on track, that would be great for fantasy, obviously.
Yeah.
Speaking of great for fantasy, let's get to the last game. Dallas at the Chargers, 55.5 point total. Chargers favored by 3.5 at home. Just play everybody. I mean, Justin Herbert was under pressure on just 12% of his dropbacks against Washington's front. And now Dallas comes in without DeMarcus Lawrence. So Herbert's stats weren't great in week one, but he looked good. The offense, I think, looked good. And this is just a spot where you play Herbert, you play Keenan Allen. Mike Williams' usage in week one was awesome. And then Eckler, maybe you're concerned that they're drawing more design plays and stuff for Mike Williams because Joe Lombardi talked him up as, you know, the X being very involved in his offenses in the past. And he immediately gets, 12 targets. But also, Austin Eckler was missing practices in the week before their game. Still had the inside the five touches, which we haven't seen from him. So if the targets go back up, it's game over for Eckler. Like, is this just a game where you just play anybody that you can?
It's yes, but this game probably deserves a whole hour. Right. There's so much nuance involved because in Dak Prescott's last five full games, he's averaged 52 pass attempts, 418 yards, 30 fantasy points, and a nice 69% completion rate. 13 touchdowns, 4 picks in that time. Having said that, if you go through those five full games, you look back at the box score of week one last year, and you notice that was the only game in this little small stretch that he's had under 7 yards per attempt and less than 300 yards. He finished with 260. And that just happened to be against Brandon Staley's defense. So it's a little bit of nuance mixed in here. Also, the Cowboys played at their slowest pace of any game since the 2019 season, ever since they've had Kellen Moore. Even though they did have the second highest pass play rate in neutral game script, and then Kellen Moore even said on Tuesday that he called 28 runs for the team, but Prescott, being the intelligent quarterback, high IQ guy that he is, checked out a 12 of them. So they tried to run more, just Prescott knew that wasn't the best way. He saw the defense and went the other way.
And by the way, that's got to make you feel even better about Zeke if you were for some reason worried in the first place.
Right, but even then I wasn't worried in the first place.
Yeah, I wasn't either.
Tweeting during live games is already the worst. That's my personal hell. And so like tweeting during island live games, like that's when, you know, if I go to hell, when I die, that it's just going to be a run on of primetime games. And I have to look at the feed. Like the devil has my eyes pried open because it's all I'm looking at. Zeke played, to your point, 83% of the snaps, his highest number since week 5 last year when he initially started being put on the team's injury report with ankle and calf injuries. He also had the team's only running back carry inside the 5 that he would have scored on, mind you, had Blake Jarwin blocked.
Yeah, can we talk about that? Everybody's first reaction was, oh, Zeke doesn't have it anymore. Like, and I think Kellen Moore even came out and said, like, Blake Jarwin just didn't block the guy. Like, he literally just didn't. It's not that he missed the block. He just didn't block him, like, at all.
Yeah.
And he would have scored the receiving touchdown if the ball was a little bit lower. He'd had to like adjust to it. If he could have just caught that in stride, he would have walked into the end zone. So
yeah,
if those things happen, nobody's worried about Zeke.
Still very confident though, considering he ran 50 routes to Pollard's 13.
Yeah, I think he ran the most routes among any running back in week one.
Pollard did, of course, accrue 4 targets in those 13 routes, but I think it was just the way, like the plays he was in there for. I think we still see, given this margin, like given this difference in routes run, that we still see these targets flutter back to Zeke. And meanwhile, Pollard just had 7 touches, which is exactly what he averaged in 15 games with Zeke last year when you couldn't use him. You literally, he was unusable in all 15 games except the one that Zeke was out for. And so, of course, we still have very high hopes for him, especially given his salary on both sides. So he's pretty much a very easy play. And then when you go to the other side of the ball, Eckler, Williams, Allen, all interesting because Justin Herbert was actually asked about throwing the ball to Eckler. And he said, that's always the plan, his response, to throw the ball downfield. And when those reads push everyone else back, that's when you go to your running back to get those yards. But the offensive line had a great time holding me upright, so I had time to make those throws.
Rashawn
Slater was clowning Chase Young.
It was absurd. Like, yeah. It was a popular, like, talking point in the offseason, the Chargers offensive line can take the next step. Like, they are taking the next step. They look unreal. Like, a 12% pressure rate against the best defensive line. Okay, maybe Tampa Bay's better, but like the top tier defensive line in football, like, I'm not concerned about Eckler, but it's also like, it's also, I don't think it's a coincidence that in his first game with Joe Lombardi, after talking him up all offseason, it's 12 targets and he was running way more intermediate. So Mike Williams' ADOT last year was 15.8 and week one was 10.
Right. And so, we know, given the absence of DeMarcus Lawrence, Neville Gallimore, and Randy Gregory, that the Cowboys won't reach Justin Herbert. There's no way. There's not going to put any pressure on him. And so that's the thing here. If Herbert had not passed to Eckler because he had time, of course he's going to have more time in week two. So that leads us to Allen and Mike Williams. But also, if Eckler does get targets, there is no guarantee he takes away from Williams. This is a new scheme. We haven't seen it yet. So he may take the targets away from Allen too. So there's just lots of ways you can play this game. I would just say you have to play this game.
Yeah. And it's interesting with Eckler too, because if he's no longer, and again, it's only week one, but if he's no longer the eight upside of like eight, nine targets a game, but he's getting all the short yardage work like we saw in week one where, yeah, Larry Roundtree played a decent amount of snaps, but it's, again, I think that had more to do with Eckler missing practice time. If Eckler's getting the inside the five carries, but that can make up for him losing maybe three or four targets per game, because like he's too talented of a player to not have a target. We know that's going to happen. He's going to get targets, and Dallas is off our defense. They're just not going to be able to stop him. You have to, like, I mentioned this, like, I don't really care, but like I said, Trayvon Diggs did shadow Mike Evans. I wonder if that was a situation where they viewed Mike Evans as their best receiver, or if it was a size thing. He did follow him into the slot where Keenan Allen's going to be more than Mike Williams. So I think that's interesting, a part of this game. Then you have Jared Cook, who is pretty involved in week one. He's relatively cheap on DraftKings, under 4K. I think they're all in play. Obviously, they're all great plays. Herbert is Herbert, you can make the case like these are the two best quarterback plays of the slate. I think Herbert does whatever he wants in this game. And then Dallas, right? No Michael Gallup. He's on IR. So it was Gallup and Amari Cooper in two wide sets. Now it's going to be CeeDee Lamb playing pretty much every snap. And we know the target share between him and Cooper is and will be insane. But now you can add potential 3,100 Cedric Wilson into the mix, who is going to play in the slot. And he was already kind of he was about as involved as somebody can be when you're the fifth option in offense. So now with Gallup out and he's going to play more, like, he's a viable value play too.
Yeah. And, you know, Cook, for all the reasons you mentioned, Williams, they're literally all in play. There's also a possibility. Again, there's just a lot to dig through in this game that without Michael Gallup, maybe they just run more 12 personnel, which is also good for Zeke, Amari, and CeeDee Lamb. Lamb, of course, who ran every route after Gallup got injured. So maybe it just gets more, the target tree more condensed. And so we're just chasing the wrong ancillary guys and really just throw more targets to the guys that matter. Eckler, though, is the one I'm pretty confident in no matter what. I know the targets from last week, but also just the fact that he answered the negatives we had about him. He was the only running back to handle touches inside the 10. He had four carries, and touches inside the five. He had two carries. Also, the fact he only played 58% of the snaps because of that injury, I'm assuming. And there's no guarantee he's increases that rate this week, but I would like to be ahead of the game he increases the rate. So I just think Eckler's also a smash play. And I love the passing game, but I kind of just want to play the two running backs and call it a day and then go to another stack.
Yeah, I mean, like, Zeke's going to be absolute chalk. I don't really care. And I'm not worried about Eckler. Like I said, Eckler is going to have 5-6 target games. And now that they're most likely going to be married to getting the goal line work, it's wheels up. Like, Eckler has slate breaking upside in this game. Like you said, I think he does play closer to like 70% of the snaps starting this week. So yeah, it's wheels up for pretty much anybody in this game. The price tags on CeeDee Lamb and Amari Cooper are very, very nice. Keenan Allen's price kind of like never moves on DraftKings, even dating back to last year. He's only 7K. Just play whoever you want in this game. It should be a lot of fun.
Now we have 12 full games with Allen, with Herbert as well, and Allen's averaged 12.5 targets. So he's still a very, very high floor. Again, there's no wrong answer here. You just have to be right.
Yeah, exactly. So it should be fun. Nice way to close out the main slate. And that'll do it. John Daigle from NBC Sports Edge joining me to break down all 13 games. It was a great, great time. We broke down a lot of great stuff. Daigle, you plugged some of the waiver wire stuff. I know you're doing a good football show. I know you're busy this weekend. We talked about that. But just plug what's going on, you know, what you're doing each week. I know it's going to be a ton. You have all the news stuff there and all the great stuff at NBC Sports Edge. Now that last time I asked you what you're doing for the content, it was off season, but now we're in season.
Yeah, now it's too much. It is a good football show, but also it's called a good football show on iTunes and Spotify. So please go subscribe. We have our weekly preview shows every Wednesday and Thursday. Also at halftime on Monday night every week, you can tune into YouTube and Twitch where we go live immediately to talk about the biggest waiver pickups of the week, as that's pretty much the time when I have at least half of the column written. And then the rest of the column comes out Tuesday morning for you to check out, updated as well as Tuesday night for high stakes leagues that run waivers on Wednesday night. And then if you're in the redraft streets, you know, FTN guys, obviously Adam, Derek, and the rest of my friends over there do a great job. But also, if you want the Daigle rankings, they're available with a discount, Daigle10 at NBCSportsEdge.com. And you can check it out there by going to the homepage and getting in on the draft guide there.
Beautiful, man. Appreciate you coming on. I'm sure we'll talk again. Everybody have a great rest of your Thursday, Friday, whatever. Great weekend. And look, we'll have a ton of great more content at FTN throughout the rest of the week. Thursday Night Football, real quick, Daigle. Giants, Washington, who wins?
Oh, God. I just have the under 42.5. I don't have any team. Yeah, well, under 42.5 and Daniel Jones over 20.5 rushing. Like that's what
I'm going to go.
Those two
I'm going to go Washington 20-16.
That's fine. It's going to be ugly. It's going to be really ugly.
But it's football. We can't complain. We've been missing it, so it's back in our lives, and we cannot complain. Best of luck if you're playing Thursday night contest. We'll talk to you guys on Friday. Thanks again to John Daigle. Follow him on Twitter at NotJDaigle for great content. We'll talk to you guys on Friday. Have a good one. See you.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of Fade the Chalk with Derek and Adam. Make sure to follow your hosts and the podcast on Twitter at @DBRO_FFB, at @APPfeiffer24, and at @ChalkFade. Smash that subscribe button so you don't miss an episode.